Welcome to Awakening Spirituality and Business Today, inspiring you to succeed with all your heart and soul. Your hosts today are Daniel Gutierrez, international business consultant, motivational speaker, and best-selling author, and Johnny Hernandez, proven business executive, passionate life and business coach, and founder of Living with Purpose, whose mission is to inspire teams and individuals to achieve their personal and professional best. Together, they'll light the path to help you achieve your absolute best. Without further ado, let's turn it over to Daniel and Johnny for today's illuminating discussion.
Well, good afternoon, everybody. What an absolutely gorgeous day out here in the Central Valley, California. And hello to my special guest and wonderful baby sister, Angela. How are you, Ange?
I'm great. How are you doing today?
I'm awesome. You know, I started thinking, like, maybe I shouldn't tell people that my sister is actually the special guest. And the more and more I thought about it, I've been wanting to get Angela on the show for some time because of what she does for a profession. And so much of what Daniel and I speak about, which, by the way, Daniel will not be joining us today. He's off and doing some other things for his other radio show, as a matter of fact. But he's doing extremely well, everyone. But I've been fighting to get my sister Angela on here because so much of what we talk about really ties into our emotional state of being. You know, our self-confidence, lack thereof, the way we feel about ourselves, our fears, our joys, all of those things that, you know, it ultimately shape how we show up in life. And I happen to have an expert in Angela, who is a clinical nursing director of medical and surgical units. And she's, I say this without any bias whatsoever, sis, that she's one of the most caring, loving, and compassionate people that I've ever met. And I noticed that, you know, whether it's in, you know, in the law enforcement or medical fields or whatever the case, you know, I heard a story yesterday, Angie, and I think this is probably a great way to bring you into the conversation. I was listening to a spiritual station out here in California, and this woman had written a letter. They were saying to her ex-pediatrician, and the letter basically was talking about when she was pregnant, they had done certain types of testing and scans, and they found out that her child was going to be born with Down, and the doctor recommended that she abort the child. And her letter basically was saying that the child was now, you know, a handful of years old. It escapes me, 3-4 years old. And then, of course, as we already know, you know, Down's children are some of the most beautiful and amazing human beings on the earth. And her note was basically telling him how she felt for him and that he'd lost the zest and the compassion for all these beautiful children he was bringing into his earth. And I share that long-winded version of it because one thing I can say about Angela is that no matter how long you've been in the business, Angie, your patients still always seem to touch your heart. And I think that's amazing, which makes you the perfect guest, because today what we want to talk about is how does our emotional state of mind directly connect and correlate with our physical well-being. So welcome to the show, sis. It's nice to have you.
Well, thank you. I'm happy to be here. Yeah, I think it's a really important topic because both of them feed into each other equally.
So let me ask you something to kind of get us started. You've been in this business for quite a while. The profession, or let me just say it a different way. How has the patients, the symptoms, the conditions that they came to you with many, many years ago to the hospital, even the emergency room, how has that changed over the years up until today? What are the types of ailments you see today versus then?
Well, you know, I think we're seeing some different things today, and it changes through the years, like you were saying. And the biggest thing is patients are living longer now. I mean, we have all this great technology that allows us to keep patients healthier, or I guess I should say just alive longer, maybe with whatever it is that they have, maybe chronic conditions or whatever. But in addition to that, you know, I think we are seeing, and if you're reading in the media at all, people will be able to echo this, we're seeing a lot more of the mental health patients. We're seeing a lot more depression, alcohol abuse, drug addiction. That's becoming a lot more prevalent in our healthcare facilities. So seeing that as well. But, you know, along with the chronic conditions that we see related to heart disease and pulmonary disease and those kinds of things as well. But, you know, just thinking about how much more acutely ill patients are now than they were 10 years ago, I think the mental health component is what stands out the most and what we're working hardest at right now in our hospitals to really try to provide the best care possible for these patients.
I think that, you know, as I listen to you and we talk about, and for all our guests here, you've heard me say it on many occasions, one of my passions is working with those that are homeless, and it's discouraging how I see us as a society treat those that are less fortunate, specifically the homeless. And I think sometimes we forget that our homeless society, and I use homeless because I think it's the extreme example, that we see homeless people, we look at them almost like they're from a third world, they don't belong. Actually, I shouldn't say from a third world, but from another planet, they don't belong. We ignore them. We do whatever we can not to engage with them for whatever reason. And I think what we seem to forget is that every one of those people that were homeless or suffer from some type of trauma in their life. Some of it may be mental illness. A lot of, you know, we see or have been to war and back. Some have suffered from drug and alcohol addiction. Some haven't suffered from drug and alcohol addiction until they became homeless. But ultimately, in every case, it was some major traumatic event that they just couldn't get past. And I think what's so that when we talk about who's showing up in our hospitals today, it's almost like, and I'll compare it to the autism spectrum only because I'm using it as a spectrum, not because it's in any way, shape, or form related to autism. There's so much of it is our ability to cope. And as I perceive it, Angie, and I really want your opinion on this, it's not just our ability to cope, but it's our support system that we have around us. So for someone, let's just say, like, you may have a neighbor that, you know, they fall in hard times, they may lose a job, their spouse may lose a job, their children may be struggling with some type of illness. They seem to be able to have coping skills that get them through it, whether, let's just say, their faith, or they can seem to manage through it without a challenge. Whereas you have another neighbor on the other side of you that happens, they completely derail, right? They don't have the energy to go out and look for a job. They're discouraged. They're depressed. They can't get through it.
Right.
Are you seeing that spread in the hospital today, Angie, the folks that you're interacting with?
You see a little bit of everything, really, to be honest. So, you know, everything from that person who could be your next door neighbor to that person who is homeless and living in the streets already. And the broad spectrum of it is, I think, mainly because mental illness is, you know, in 2008, it was identified as the third largest cause of homelessness for adults. And I think that that's just ever growing. So it's more and more important that we as healthcare workers and as a society take in people and just make sure that we're really providing the best care for them we can and providing the best support that we can for them, because it can be you or I or anyone else that we know who's dealing with this. And, you know, whether it's the physical ailment that creates the mental illness or the mental illness that leads to the physical ailment, it can happen both ways and it can really happen to anyone. If you haven't heard of MakeItOkay.org, their whole mission is about making anxiety, depression, mental illness okay, and making it acceptable in our society and people to talk about it more, because it's been such a different, it's been such a taboo issue in the past with so many judgments around it and that kind of thing. So the whole point of MakeItOkay.org is to hop on there, take the pledge, you know, get a sticker or get a button and just let people know that we support them and we're able to be out there in the community and provide them whatever it is, you know, whether it's just emotional support, just chatting with people, or in the healthcare realm, if it's, you know, the actual physical treatment and care.
This is awesome. I just pulled up the website where you're talking about it. I haven't heard this, and shame on me. I take pride in being on this stuff. This is, if you haven't logged on to this, people, it's, what a great website. It talks about what is mental health, what is mental illness, common conditions, what to say, gives stories, has videos. I am going to sign up. I think that's terrific. Well, I want to go back to something that you just mentioned, though, is what I heard you say is not only is it okay to struggle with things like depression, and it means you're not broke. What I heard you say was a message for those who may not be, and I would challenge you, find anyone in society that doesn't struggle emotionally in one way, shape, or form. But if I heard you correctly, I heard you say that don't give up from being a support mechanism. And And I want to be cautious here, and I can speak from a point of view of working with addicted, whether it be alcohol, sex, gambling, drugs. I've spent a lot of time with people who have been very, very close to myself, and so I have experience in that area. But what I would share is in that same vein is that the support for someone who is struggling in any way, shape, or form, and we're going to transition this conversation to go down parallel paths and talk about how does that affect us in the business world here in just a moment. But when we do something like that, or we think about, it's real easy for us from a support standpoint. I'm not talking about, let's just say, a young adult who's been in treatment 15 times, who refuses help, who's taking money, who's all of these things. That's not what I'm referring to. So again, I want to say to the majority and not necessarily go to the extreme there. But so much of what we need to provide is just unbridled support when it comes to being around those who are struggling. And when I work with, when I speak to homeless quite often, they'll say, well, I was with my mom and my dad, and I'll say, well, where's your family at? And they'll list off about five family members, mom, dad, this brother, this sister. And I never pass judgment because you don't know what this individual put those people through. On the same note, I also ask myself, how available were they? Were they that helpful? Because you see the extremes in society in terms of families from a support structure as well. So, Angie, when you're talking about, you know, the whole emotional state of mind, what did you say, homelessness, did you say it was the top three? Could you repeat that stat again?
The third, so homelessness is the third leading cause of, mental illness is the third leading cause of homelessness for single adults, and that was back in 2008 with the anticipation that that number would grow. And, you know, I don't have any updated stats on that, but, you know, it really lends to your thinking about what is mental illness, you know, and like I said, if you have any questions about it, go to makeitokay.org and check it out. But mental illness isn't necessarily your more severe or acute illnesses that you think of when you think of mental illness. And some of us think of that old, old mental institution mindset and mind frame if we haven't worked with it. But, I mean, it's everything from, you know, a small amount of depression that you might have to, you know, having severe bipolar schizophrenia and those kinds of things. So, you know, it's the whole spectrum. So it's really important that you think of that and kind of internalize it. It can be anything. And, you know, according to the World Health Organization in the 1940s, they stated that health was defined as a complete state of physical, mental, and social well-being. So not just mental, but physical and social well-being, and not just the absence of disease and infirmity. So, you know, it's one component of our health.
How do we get so far away from that?
Well,
just,
I think
that's a perfect definition for it.
It really is. And to think it was made, you know, by the World Health Organization back in 1948, it just goes to show you they were really thinking at the time about what was going on and could kind of anticipate where we would be today. But it requires us now that we can see in our numbers what's going on with our population. How can we support these people in the workplace? And I'm not saying these people as if it's someone else. How can we support each other in the workplace?
I think that's an awesome way to put it. How can we support each other in the workplace? You know, I was having a conversation last night with a young man who's employed in one of the businesses here, and I had noticed in the last week that he hadn't quite been himself. And I pulled him aside and I said, talk to me. You know, you're usually one of the most inspiring young guys I know. You're happy. You're a go-getter. You're working a million miles a minute. You're just such a joy to have around. And I'm not saying you're not. You're always a joy to have around, but you're not yourself. And then he proceeded to share a story with me that would, quite frankly, break many hearts. And I talk about people who are tenacious, committed. I mean, I think about the challenges I have in my life, and I sit down and I speak to a young man like this who is maybe just a little older than half my age. I think, dear Lord in heaven, I'm so – one, two things happen. One, it makes me incredibly grateful for what I've been blessed with. And the other thing is, at the same time, it makes me really stop and ground myself that I don't – as bad as you think you have it on your worst day, there's a very large percentage of the population that has it much more difficult. And people like that still come in with, you know, with a very optimistic, positive attitude. And And it happens in the workplace too. So when you transition, you start talking about work, and we start looking at statistics of how many people have missed work. I just heard one yesterday in a local county that I spend time in, that they said the average amount of time that a child missed in school this year in this particular area was 3 weeks this last year, 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And it also happened to be an area where the children actually weren't eating very well and came from dysfunctional or broken families. And that's not, by any stretch of imagination, that shouldn't surprise any of us. So you talk about, you know, what the World Health Organization tells us in the 40s. But see, the challenge is we try to pigeonhole that into struggling parts of the country or struggling parts of the world, when in fact it happens in our Fortune 50, Fortune 100 businesses all the time, doesn't it?
Correct. Yes, it does. And I think that's the importance of being a leader who can identify that there's something not right here. And, you know, if there's a conflict, how do you go about that? How do you approach it with an individual without having the judgment in place right away and saying, oh, well, you know, they're not performing the way they should be. They're not doing what they should be. It's time to performance manage this person. Before going down that road, you know, going down the road of what is going on with this person? Is there something that I can help them with? Is there a way that I can support them so that they can develop in their role? How can we really support people to go for what their passion is? Because that's what's really going to motivate them and make them do their very best. So thinking about all those things as a leader, that makes that even more important.
So it's easy for us. I think you said it well there. It's easy for us as soon as we start seeing an employer team member, let's just say, derail, or they're not themselves, or they're not performing, it's really easy for us to put the pen to the paper and say, first warning, second warning, thank you, you're gone, versus
yes,
taking the quality time out of especially a country. We're talking about the United States, just use that as an example for our national listeners. It's easy for us to say that, well, you know what, that's a conversation that's just too busy to have, when in fact, if you'd slow down long enough, there's multiple things that take place. One, you have a human being that feels valued and listened to, and the other thing is you may have a chance to course correct and be something bigger than just a supervisor. And I think that's really the definition. We talk about all the time in the show, what's the difference between a manager and a leader? And a leader is about people, a manager is about things. And if you stop long enough to identify that employee that just for whatever reason seems to be struggling, and rather than sit down and lead with your performance is subpar, and you lead with, how are you today? What's going on in your life? I notice that you don't seem like yourself. And actually stop long enough and listen intently without any interruptions, phone calls, text messages, or I've got to run to another meeting, that you may be surprised. The long tail of that whole thing is, if you invest the time to have those conversations, what's really fascinating is the amount of money you save yourself as a leader in an organization in turnover and training. And I just, I still struggle with that, how easy we write people off nowadays. And it's just, even it's at epidemic level, and it just blows my mind. Angie, let me ask you something. Of all of the ailments you see people come in with today, what percentage of them do you believe begin with, let's just say, and I want to use the word very carefully, emotional stability, or something in their lives that they've been struggling with that has either evolved into a physical ailment and or has, well, let's just start there, that's evolved, that began from an emotional state of mind that's become something physical.
Well, I mean, I think that that's kind of one of those questions is what came first, the chicken or the egg, you know? It's difficult because physical and emotional well-being impact each other. And so if the physical ailment comes first, it's likely that they're going to have an emotional component. And if the emotional component came first, then it's likely to lead to more physical components or a mindset that there are more physical issues going on than maybe there really is even. So I think knowing that, it's difficult to pinpoint that number because you really have both going on with many, many individuals. And the really unfortunate thing is that when you're seeing a patient and assessing them for physical things, such as, you know, maybe they have chronic diabetes, for instance, and they struggle with this and they have a lot going on in their life and they're trying to control their diet and that kind of thing. But if that's what they're being seen for, a lot of times that emotional component isn't even addressed by their regular physician because that's not what they're there for. So that can really easily be missed. So I really encourage people to think about that as well. You know, there are a lot of things that people can't self-identify, and it's easier when you're the outsider to say, hey, you know, even if I'm your boss or I'm your peer or your neighbor or whoever that is, say, hey, you know, I noticed you're just not quite as cheery as you used to be. What's going on? Is there some way, you know, I can help with that? Or is there something, you know, I can offer you? Because that can be hard to identify too.
I think that's interesting. So I was thinking about a conversation I was having. It was with my daughter yesterday, which, by the way, my oldest daughter, although Angela knows this, I'm very thrilled to say that my oldest daughter is engaged to be married after last night. And it's kind of crazy because she called me in the morning. Actually, it was she's in the Midwest, so she's a couple hours ahead, and she works extremely early. So she'd called me after she'd been to work a few hours, and she said to me, Dad, that my day didn't start out too well. I said, well, tell me about it. She says, there was nothing. She said, I just woke up. I was feeling a little bit down. I just wasn't myself, and I really struggled kind of getting going today. She says, but you know what? She says, I'm very fortunate to have a job that I went to work and that I have a job that actually I go to work that actually cheers me up and puts me in a better state of mind. She says, Dad, I am in awesome mood now, and it's because of the fact that, you know, I've been at work for a while. I thought, holy cow, if we could actually run companies like that, and she tells me stories about the company she works for all the time. Sounds like a great organization. I mean, they genuinely treat their employees like gold, as they should, right, as we all should. But what I thought was so compelling to me is, again, you talk about the streams, the extremes of the spectrum. You have a company like this where if I wake up and I'm not myself and I don't feel and I'm having a rough day, the best place for me to go is to go to work because I'm surrounded by people that value me, that care about me, that support me, and it turns that doom and gloom, that tough, difficult day, into a much better day. I'm not saying that works for everyone, but if you work in an environment like that, you'd be more susceptible to getting up, getting dressed, showering, and getting to work, as opposed to, I don't feel like anyone that really cares about me. And if I show up in this current state of mind, I know I'm not going to bring the best version of myself, which could result in punitive outcomes. So therefore, it's easier for me to call in and say, my child's sick, I have a toothache, I've got a cold, whatever. And then all of a sudden, we run into these attendance issues we do, right? I mean, would you agree?
I definitely would agree. And I think, you know, I've spent quite a bit of time recently reading research, and in healthcare, we spend a lot of time doing that just because that's where we're at. That's what we have to do to find out what's new and what's going on and what some new approaches are that we can use. And one of the things I was recently studying was burnout in healthcare workers and how we can support healthcare workers and that kind of thing. And some of the articles were directly related to healthcare workers and some weren't. And, you know, by no means am I saying that as a leader, you have to be, you know, a psychotherapist and be doing therapy with your team. I mean, you know, but don't be so scared of mixing business and home, you know. Don't be so scared of asking how people truly are, because if we want to be an effective workplace, people are going to bring their things to work, and we've got to be able to work through that with them so that they can go out and do their job effectively. And if we can allow them the space to do that, we are going to have those issues, attendance and people working when they're really sick or working when they're not in a good emotional state of well-being, and that's going to trickle down to our customers or whoever that may be, no matter what business we work for. So I think the message is just don't be so afraid to embrace that and to really be there and be available and try to do whatever you can to support those individuals. And if you have an employee health department or you have any kind of support group that you can offer to your employees, really putting that forward for them.
I love that. Let me ask you another question because we're going to be out of time here soon. I didn't even take callers today just because I just wanted to, I really wanted your opinion. And by all means, you know, folks, you know how to get a hold of us, right? Twitter, Facebook, you name it, even the our website. Please, by all means, shoot us a note and give us some insight, feedback, shoot us some additional questions. We'll get Angie back on another show. But so in a couple minutes or less, I think it's interesting that, you know, and I say the two most underappreciated and underpaid professions in the United States are teaching and nursing. And I know you probably won't disagree with me on that, Ange, but and because so much of it, it's bigger than just teaching out of a book or just sewing up a wound. I mean, what percentage of what you do or your team today how much of that is more emotional and social than actually physically caring for someone? Like sitting by the bed and having a conversation and just talking about life. What percentage of the job is that versus actually, quote unquote, fixing people?
I would say in the amount of time that I've been in nursing, I've even seen the change in it. And I would say probably right now we're working more so in 80% on emotional empathy. Like, how can we really show empathy to a patient? How do we get down to where they're at and meet them there and really get to that, what's causing them the issue? Because it may be there for something that's physical, but there it may be a completely different problem that's bothering them or ailing them while they're there. So, we spend a great majority of our time right now working with our staff, working with all of our teams on how we can be better at showing empathy, how we can be better at really providing that compassionate care. And I would probably say 20% technical right now.
That's amazing. And I think as you look at other countries, you know, you talk about, you know, Western medicine versus Eastern medicine. You took all the different ways. You know, you look at Europe where, you know, you may take a 1 to 2 hour lunch break. All of those things that maybe we struggle with the United States. And mind you, there's a lot of things we do in the United States that other countries, you know, dream of that we're very, very blessed to have. But when you tell me 80% of the job you're doing, and I won't even dare to ask because I already have a pretty good idea. When you stop and you look at the patient satisfaction, customer guest satisfaction, for someone who goes through that experience versus just goes through a cold experience where they just sew you up and you're like a number in one in and one out, again, that'd be different end of the spectrum. And we're going to run out of time here today, but I guess, Angie, any other closing thoughts around this topic, around emotional state of being? And if you were to make any recommendations to our leaders out there, what would it be? And what would your recommendation be?
Well, I think, like you were saying, John, is just, you know, really focusing on your team members when they come to you, closing your laptop, moving your phone away from you, whatever that communication device is, whatever's, you know, bothering you, but make sure that you're just focusing on them and really listening to what they have to say. Don't be afraid to get involved. If you know people who are better at this component of leadership or really have that down, you know, focus on getting in touch with them and maybe having them mentor you a little bit, because it's not always easy for everyone, but it's definitely a must, especially if you really want to have an engaged and efficient workforce.
I agree. I think that's awesome. Well, on that note, I guess before we part, what I would share is exactly, Angie, it's been awesome to have you on. I love the message of the humility, the compassion, the love, the faith. I mean, ultimately, that's why we're here on the earth, folks, is to take care of each other. It's not about things. It's about people. When we put people first, we'll always win. We'll see you again next week. We have another awesome guest, another great topic. Thanks for joining me, Angela, and to everyone else, God bless, and have a wonderful, wonderful week.
You've been listening to Awakening Spirituality in Business Today with Daniel Gutierrez and Johnny Hernandez. To provide feedback, listen to more episodes, or learn how Daniel and Johnny can help you in your business, visit their websites at livingwithpurpose.today or danielgutierrez.com. You can also call them directly at 1-805-764-1463. Thank you again for listening. The personal fulfillment and professional success you've been searching for is within your reach. Lead with your heart and live a life of purpose today.